The Walking Dead Season 6, Episode 13 is over, but we are just getting started here on The Walking Dead post-show recap. And now here we are, two nervous little birds. I am Rob Sesternino, and filling in for Josh Wigler tonight, it's once again Alex Kidwell. Alex, how are you?
I'm doing great, Rob. Yeah, that's right. I'm going to have to, you know, just try to emphasize the point that we are all Wiggler.
And, yes.
We are one unit. We are Legion. And, you know, one Josh is as good as another.
Yeah, that's right. Well, Josh will be back with us for the Walking Dead voicemail show later on this week. Happy birthday this weekend to Josh Wigler. But we have a really fantastic Walking Dead episode to talk about tonight. I'm really excited about this one because this was one of my favorite Walking Dead episodes, maybe ever. I don't need all of the, those great and big action set pieces like last week. That was really great. But to me, I feel like this is what The Walking Dead does best, where we just take a couple of characters in one location and we tell a really awesome story. And to me, this was like Shades of the Grove tonight, Alex.
Yeah, really enthralling character episode, I think. A lot to get into. Some very interesting kind of dichotomies between these groups, some interesting, you know, conversations that are had that maybe teach us more about this group, the Saviors, and kind of what they're about and how they came to be who or how they maybe are. And, we didn't have a lot of information about them before this episode. So I think the back and forth between Carol and, I guess her name was Molly, the actress Alicia Witt.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, with those conversations, we really get to, see some interesting dynamics and, especially, kind of get a sense that the two of them maybe started in a very similar place before all this went down. And, so it's a very interesting kind of relationship between the two of those characters.
Really interesting episode for Carol and for Maggie. And I thought all of these supporting characters that they brought in this episode were all really, really interesting and fun. And I think it's going to be a good show tonight. Of course, we're going to get into your questions tonight, as usual. Hashtag PS Recaps. And then also on our YouTube channel at postshowrecaps.com/YouTube. Of course, this is the first show for us this week. We'll also get into Walking Dead voicemail later on this week. So looking forward to talking all of that through in the next couple of days. All right. So Alex, big picture for you. What did you think overall with this episode?
I thought it was really good. I like the name of the episode, right? The same boat, right? And you get that sense, right? That these people aren't necessarily in control, or if they are, that it's very hard to understand what that might look like, because they kind of emphasize or paint a picture that kind of looks very much like they believe themselves to be the victims. And if they're the victims and Rick and his group are the victims, then who's responsible for the heinous atrocities that are going on in this world?
So I think the big question coming out of this episode is, how much was Carol playing possum in this video or in this episode? And how much is Carol actually affected by the kinds of things that we saw her? How much has Carol changed from the character that we've really watched on this show the last 2 years?
Yeah, it's a great question, because you definitely get the moment. I mean, we saw last week she's writing in the log. She doesn't, and it's a great juxtaposition with the Molly character, who says she lost count after double digits. Last week we saw Carol has not lost count. She's at 18. She knows she's at 18. And now I guess she's at 20. But the fact is, Carol hasn't lost count and it doesn't seem to want to lose count. And that's an interesting distinction between those characters, where Molly believes this is the new world and is just going to go ahead. And Carol, while she clearly knows some things need to happen that are grim, obviously, I mean, throwing the lighted cigarette in the room with the gas and burning those guys alive represents a new kind of depth to kind of where Carol has gone in order to ensure the safety of her group. But at the same time, I mean, yeah, she definitely feels it. You know what I mean? Whereas Molly seems to have like prevented herself from being able to feel it anymore.
For you, where did you think that this change came from in Carol? Because there, she definitely is undergoing some sort of change in her character, this metamorphosis. But I don't really know where that happened. Was it that Sam died after they had that conversation? Was it the battle with Morgan? Was it her killing the wolf? Do you think that there's one thing in particular?
I don't know. I mean, I wonder if, getting captured and the knowledge that, they were threatening to kill Maggie, who's pregnant right there. I mean, I feel like that was all pretty scary. Carol really did seem to emphasize kind of the, her fear of Maggie being out there last episode and then her fear of Maggie being hurt this episode. And, you know, Carol was talking about, you know, not, you know, having issues with killing. But then when that woman, you know, slashed the knife and cut Maggie's shirt, I mean, she walked right up to her and shot her point blank in the temple. So I think that goes to emphasize that what Carol was really struggling with was this idea that these women were talking about, you know, babies are stupid, and the idea of a new world with better futures, like, that's not what we're interested in. I think Carol is still interested in that, and Carol does still believe that and I think that's what holds Rick's group above most of these other groups we find, is that they really do seem to be striving for a tomorrow that's better than today, while the rest of them seem to really be kind of living in the moment and just trying to make sure they have enough to eat and a safe place to sleep.
What did you think about Carol with the rosary beads? That was the last shot we saw in the episode, where Carol was like holding the rosary so tight that blood was coming down from her hands. First off, what about this turn of Carol turning to religion? Do you feel like that this is all completely authentic?
I don't. I mean, I certainly got the impression, you know, from the episode that she was spending a lot of that feigning weakness. And, you know, these characters that she was being held captive by certainly didn't seem to respect, you know, people who are, you know, gripping tightly to their religion in this new world. I mean, they certainly, you know, the one woman said, "Oh, you're one of those," you know, the cigarette lady. Yeah, was that Mal?
That was Mal. I loved Mal. Yeah. Were you a Leftovers guy?
Yes, I have caught up on The Leftovers.
Yeah, she reminded me so much of Patty from The Leftovers.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that, especially the chain smoking.
Yeah, she was really, really good.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, you know, these are characters that really seemed, you know, different and yet similar. It was interesting. But Carol, I definitely believe, was feigning weakness in that moment. She was doing what she needed to do. In order, you know, by hyperventilating, she gets them to open up dialogue with her. You know, there seems to be method to the madness throughout. And then she's using the rosary. I mean, she's shaving it down to a needle so she can cut her way out. So I didn't see it as much of kind of her, you know, finding religion or anything like that, so much as her taking advantage of her surroundings to the utmost.
But you don't feel like any part of Carol is clinging onto that rosary for the reasons that a rosary is intended?
I think it's possible. I think, you know, I'd need to see more. But I think from what we got this episode, it could have easily been practical, Carol, as well. And I think I could have bought that.
What did you think was the significance of that blood coming down from her hands at the end of the episode?
Yeah, you know, like, that's one of those things that I just, you know, things like that I don't necessarily pick up on as tells. But that's a good point, Rob, is that is kind of one of those visual cues that The Walking Dead loves to use kind of emphasize, you know, a point. I did say last week that Carol's emphasis on the safety of Maggie and kind of this new kind of softer, I guess, Carol, it is kind of scary. I do worry about the character. You know, obviously her and Maggie surviving this, you wonder if they could ever be, you know, they seem indestructible, but we do seem to be like getting these close calls, and close calls are a scary thing.
Yeah. And that moment that we're talking about with Carol, with the, you know, squeezing the rosary so hard that with that sharp edge that she sharpened and blood coming down from her hands, that happened after Rick went ahead and shot the guy who said he was Negan at point blank range. Was it just that it was more death? Does she feel like, oh, we are the bad guys? Is that what you think that was the reason why she's ending up clutching the rosary so tight?
That's an interesting point. Yeah. And I guess, you know, the fact that she knew that guy is not Negan because she heard them call him Primo. So she knows that guy's name is Primo. And she also heard them say, "We are all Negan." So I think maybe she also was afraid in that moment of, you know, Rick kind of jumped the gun. Maybe, you know, maybe we're not as prepared for this group as we think we might be. They clearly have military training and, you know, some, you know, people to come in as reinforcements. And I think there was more to be gained from questioning that guy. And I think Carol was certainly, I mean, we see like Carol has always been calm and now she's not calm for whatever reason. And I think that is something to watch going forward for sure.
What did you make of at the end of the episode? Maggie says, you know, "I'm done now after this." So what do you think the future holds for Maggie?
Well, I hope she'd just go back to Alexandria for a few months and take it easy. I mean, I think if that blade cutting the shirt is not a close enough call for you to, you know, just go back and be, you know, kind of the political figurehead that, you know, Deanna wanted you to be from the beginning anyway, then I don't know what else kind of sign you need from this world. But yeah, I think, you know, If it wasn't Maggie's call, I think Glenn and everybody else would certainly be telling her at this point, let's pump the brakes.
Yeah, this was a bad idea to bring Maggie out here. But Maggie was, you know, pretty much just as much of a badass as Carol was throughout this episode, really getting into hand-to-hand combat a number of times throughout this episode. What did you make of, did you learn anything new about Maggie tonight?
Yeah, well, I thought was really impressive. I mean, I remember a couple weeks ago, you and Josh talking about, you know, is Maggie really a politician? Like, where did this kind of story arc come from?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought what I thought was really, really cool about tonight is you saw that Maggie does have proficiency for that. She is skilled at that because you saw the sit down between her and I guess the lady's name was Paula, the brunette. Where, you know,
Paula was the redhead. She was the leader. I believe that Shell was the name of the woman that she was locked up with.
Good, good. Okay, I'm glad you were catching this. Okay, so Shell. But, you know, Shell goes in there to interrogate Maggie with, you know, whatever, you know, presumably she was allowed to, you know, torture her to some degree to get information. She comes away with nothing. And Maggie actually learns a lot about her in that exchange, including that that woman used to be pregnant. And, you know, had a situation where it didn't go, you know, there was no fairy tale ending on that pregnancy. And so Maggie gains information that she's able to try to leverage. And I think it's just, you know, it emphasizes that Maggie has skill in these kinds of negotiations, even in scary kind of tense moments, that she's really come a long way from, you know, season two, Maggie.
Yeah, we did learn a bit about the saviors as well tonight, including in that scene with Shell, short for Michelle, and with Maggie, that her boyfriend, who was kind of a D, as Shell told us, that was somebody who got blown up. And the Story Sync, AMC Story Sync, as I was watching during the episode, confirms that her boyfriend was one of the guys that Daryl ended up blowing away with the bazooka in the season or the half season premiere. So the people who were the saviors, I guess there's been some sort of a mystery who did that to that group of people.
Yeah, well, it all comes full circle. And I think this is, you know, an interesting thing that we start to see. While there are other groups, that there are other perspectives, and that there's like missing information depending on, you know, who you are. And like, whereas, you know, Rick and his group certainly didn't know everything there is to know about this group of saviors, because they're, you know, a lot of their knowledge of this new world took place in Georgia. But that doesn't mean that this group wasn't busy that entire time up here, establishing connections, finding weaponry, bringing people in. So, you know, you do get this interesting kind of dynamic where it's like Rick and his group have knowledge that they are missing, you know, and there's just kind of like blank scenes for all these different groups, depending on kind of where you are and who you have come into contact with.
Now, the leader of this group was Paula, as we've mentioned her a couple of times. I thought she was really fantastic. I really loved this character. And, you know, I'm a little sad that this was pretty much a one and done outside of, you know, being on the walkie talkie at the end of last week's episode. But real, what a great job she ended up doing.
Yeah, yeah. And this is, I touched on earlier, actress Alicia Witt. And I know her most prominently from the show Justified, which Josh and Antonio covered, a fantastic show. And, you know, but I had the first thought when she came on the screen. I was like, is that Ron Howard's daughter? Is this a member of the Howard clan? Because you're so in tune to thinking that when you see these like prominent redheaded actors and actresses. But yeah, she was really great tonight.
Yeah, she was really, really great. I loved getting her story of where she comes from, that same sort of background as Carol, that she sort of like was in a meek position before this all went down. And then she was sort of thrust into this, you know, badass sort of role, which she now is in. And so Carol and her, you know, again, this title of the same boat, you do feel like that for Carol and Paula, that Carol did see herself in that same boat as Paula, except that Carol then has really discovered this, you know, playing this wolf in sheep's clothing, where she's going to, you know, play this character, which has suited her. And I guess at times, maybe how well has it suited her, because she doesn't want to be the badass anymore. But it really was the thing that really saved them this week by being able to pretend that she was somebody that she wasn't. But what did you think of Paula and her arc from going from the secretary, mother of four, to a woman who's killed so many people she can't even remember how many she killed?
Yeah, it's a really, really good comparison, you know, and really, really interesting similarities. I think Paula, to me, really represents where Carol was in, say, like, maybe season three or season four. I mean, one thing that we really got from Paula's character in the the lines that in the dialogue she had this episode, one word that kept coming up, or two words that kept coming up, were strength and weakness, as like strength being like a clear trait that she valued, and weakness being like thing, you know, a comment that she used multiple times to describe Carol. You could tell that, you know, her background had really kind of led her to believe in this new world that strength is to be valued and weakness above anything else is to be abhorred. And I really do believe, like, after Carol had kind of gotten past Ed and, you know, that abusive relationship and Sophia's death, and had really kind of found empowerment in that moment, like season three, that's really where she was, which is that strength above all else. But Carol at this point, I think, has found like a new level, whereas you can be strong without being cruel or careless. And she's found like this kind of, you know, almost, you know, peace despite the chaos around her, where it's, you know, she's capable of doing what needs to be done without seeing it as, you know, while still feeling it. And I think that's important. You know, that's a big distinction.
Yeah. When Carol first said that, you know, she didn't, you know, she was like turning to the rosary to help her get over the death of her daughter, which I'm not sure whether or not that is ultimately true. How much religion Carol turned to after she lost Sophia, that basically they said, you don't believe in that stuff, do you?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, if, you know, if Father Gabriel, I don't know, maybe there were some conversations we didn't see, but he certainly wasn't the most convincing guy.
No.
So he wasn't winning followers left and right at Alexandria that we saw. He was putting out flyers, but yeah, so I don't know. I just think this is, you know, interesting that we see kind of almost Carol, you know, seeing a reflection of her, of at least a part of herself in this character of Paula.
Yeah. So now, in terms of the saviors and what they've got going on, I mean, I believe, you know, we have not yet found Negan. I think that's fair to say. So in terms of what do the saviors have left? You know, Rick and company took out all of the saviors last week that were at the satellite dish base. Then we had this other group, which was outside, and you had that one guy who lost his arm. What was that guy's name?
Oh yeah, Paul? What was it?
No, there was a Paula. I don't know, that guy. There was that guy. What was he? Gunshot douche.
Yeah. Like, or you know, lead pipe in the arm douche. Yeah,
tourniquet douche. Yeah. So you had that guy, and then you know, you had this other like a ragtag bunch with Paula and Mal and Shell, and then you had basically Primo, who was, I guess, their doctor, who was still in the group. So how many more people are in the saviors?
Scary thought, right? And it makes you really think that maybe they should have taken another week or two and done more recon.
Not to mention that Daryl blew up like 10 of their guys recently.
Yep. And yeah, not just how many people, but how many locations. And now we know they had the satellite dish location. They've got this Saw 4 location. And then they've at least got a third location because people came with Jeeps and stuff and, you know, meet me on the kill floor. So there's at least three places and there could be more. So, and yeah, I mean, I wouldn't, you know, it stands to reason that if they're employing these kinds of tactics that, you know, I mean, it's very possible that Osama bin Negan has body doubles or, you know, all kinds of stuff going on. So I think this is really scary that, you know, Rick and his group have essentially shown their entire hand at this point. And if Negan is not taken care of, that's a problem.
So where do you think Rick and company go from here? You think they just go back to Alexandria and be like, okay, I guess we did it.
Well, I think you could go a couple routes. I think you can go back to Alexandria and stay very vigilant, knowing that retribution is surely coming if any of that group is left, which they almost certainly are. Or you can just start sending out raiding parties, I guess, or scouting. But the danger of that is that you maybe spread yourself too thin. So yeah, it's not an ideal situation. I mean, really, if you're gonna move, you need to, you know, kind of sever the situation, and they weren't able to do that. So it's going to be messy no matter how it shakes out.
I mean, could they just head back to Hilltop and be like, mission accomplished, we did it?
I guess you could try. Yeah. But, you know, I guess if then that backfire, if Negan shows up and starts, you know, lopping off Gregory's head or whatever, then, you know, you lose Jesus and them as an ally too. So it's tricky. I mean, there's not a lot of good options now, given the route they've taken.
Okay. What else about tonight's episode?
I thought it was really, really interesting. You know, I talked about it a little bit, but that everyone is identifying themselves as Negan. And that really is like kind of a cult-like mentality, I believe. And, you know, certainly we know, because we know that Jeffrey Dean Morgan was cast
like Spartacus.
Right. Yeah. Jeffrey Dean Morgan was cast as the Negan character. So there, it does seem that there probably is one true Negan. But the idea that all these people are willing to, I mean, with a gun to their head, say, well, you've got him. I mean, and really just like, that's a level of, you know, cult-like loyalty that is terrifying, I think, if these are your enemies.
Mm. So we saw Carol in this episode tell Mal to not smoke. You know, smoking, that'll kill you. We also saw her earlier in season six. She told one of the people at Alexandria, hey, don't smoke, and then these cigarettes will kill you. And then that woman ended up dying in that same episode. So that's really the kiss of death once Carol tells you not to smoke cigarettes because it'll kill you. But we also saw Carol smoking cigarettes in this episode. What did that mean to you?
Oh, no, Rob, I don't like the picture you just painted. I feel like that's not good. The law of averages are against her now.
Yeah.
I'm scared. There's a lot of like just subtle tells or just shifts of a character that's so established that I'm really scared for Carol this season. I got to be honest.
Yeah. Carol's turning and you, do you feel like that Carol could sacrifice herself for the group?
Yeah. Or for pregnant Maggie, you know, I mean, I just think there's, you know, we're seeing more and more like, you know, and I don't know if it started at that moment with the wolf or just where it started, but you know, she did, if she was able to fake those tears, that's really impressive. But if not, I mean, she has tapped into an emotional side one way or another that could be a vulnerability. I mean, we saw like she said, I should have shot that guy. We wouldn't be here if I had shot that guy. And Maggie says, don't worry about it, but you can't help but worry about it a little bit because maybe she has a point.
Yeah. And then we also saw Donnie was the guy that Donnie just wanted to kill Carol and Maggie earlier tonight. And basically he was calling out Paula and said, this is a terrible trade. You know, you don't have the sack to pull this off, Paula. What did you think of the Donnie character tonight? And then ultimately that he ends up dying when he dies before they even are able to, he turns.
Yeah. It kind of seemed like a real douche, right? Although, I mean, ultimately I guess they were able to use him in their escape plan. So, I mean, that's really making lemonade out of lemons, Rob, or making Walkerade out of, you know, douche. I don't know what you want to call it.
Yeah. Now, I noticed also that Mal was the person that Maggie ended up killing in this episode. The fact that Mal has a terminal illness, basically that she is like, you know, really far along in, you know, having some advanced form, I guess, seemingly of lung cancer. Do you feel like, does that change anything for you about Maggie's decision to kill that person?
No, I think that character to me, you know, besides, I guess, you know, Donnie, that woman had established herself as kind of the most heartless of that little group. And certainly she did not care about, you know, secondhand smoke for Maggie's baby. And, you know, while that's a pretty big leap to go from secondhand smoke to, you know, sicking Walker on you, you know, I mean, they were going to do what they were going to do. I mean, it seemed very clear that that group was not going to resolve this situation peaceably.
Because to me, I do think that the show goes to great lengths to really preserve the humanity of certain characters. And just in the way that Maggie has been, you know, that character is being drawn, you know, Maggie ends up, she's going in to go with to kill Donnie, or she would have killed Donnie, but he was already dead. You have where she ends up having to murder Mal, but Mal already had a terminal illness, that Mal was basically already dead, or she was as good as dead. So I kind of feel like that you say, you know, it wasn't like she killed somebody, but we didn't end up seeing Maggie have to kill either Shell or Paula in this episode, two people that would have gone on to have perfectly fine lives after this. So I do think that they do try to, you know, keep Maggie as somebody who we can always, you know, identify with her humanity still.
Interesting. Yeah. So you think the show writers are kind of like maintaining Maggie as this kind of symbol of humanity or innocence?
Innocence. I think that's probably the right word. And even though Maggie is, you know, has really demonstrated to be a badass here, you know, she ends up, you know, going to try to fight Donnie while she's still tied up. I do think that the show always wants to keep Maggie being portrayed in a positive light, where we will see more shades of gray with a character like Carol, like Rick, like Daryl, Abraham, you know, so on and so forth.
Yeah. I mean, that's a good point. It's interesting. And I think it'll be interesting to see, you know, going forward, you know, how this affects Maggie, or if we do see some kind of change for Maggie, because this was a crazy traumatic experience. I mean, especially that knife situation. I mean, you saw the look in Maggie's eye. I mean, she realized how horrifically close she came to catastrophe with her pregnancy.
Yeah,
there.
I got a little nervous too. There,
scary,
I was like,
scary,
hold on,
stuff.
What happened? What?
Oh, God, not the
shirt.
Nervous.
She just ripped the shirt.
We've talked about on this show, like the thought of like, can they have two babies? One baby seems crazy. Like they were saying on this, you know, and you know, Cabin Douche said it so long ago. And now tonight, I mean, you know, I was getting a little bit of Cabin Douche vibes from Paula. I guess you could, she's the douchess, the cabin or whatever you want to call her. But yeah, I mean, it's not a, you know, unpractical point that a baby is kind of a liability and two babies is twice the liability. So I'm still scared, you know, for the safety of that child.
Yeah, I thought it was an interesting point where, you know, Paula was sort of mocking Maggie about the decision to have a baby, like, oh, and Maggie's like, okay, you know, isn't that what it's all about, you know? And Paula says, no, it's all about standing up, you know, upright. And she said, no, that's what happens. Walkers can stand upright. And interestingly, by the end of the episode, there's Paula, who is now a walker, is still standing upright, but is no longer a member of the human race.
Yeah, absent one cheek, which it was kind of interesting that he lost interest so quickly, I think. You know, here's a body that close. I guess once it starts to turn, it's like meat going bad or something, I got to figure.
Well, that was really, I thought, one of the grosser things I've ever seen on The Walking Dead, of just like pulling, you know, pulling the cheek off of her face. Really, really gross. And then ultimately, then we see her at the end of the episode and like her face is like been completely eaten off.
Yeah, I believe the butchers call that the jowl.
Right? Yeah, oh, really gross. Now, who put those walkers in their way so that they weren't able to get out? I was a little confused because I thought at first it was Rick and company basically were like laying a trap for the people that were holding Maggie and Carol captive. Did you see it that way, or was that the saviors who did that?
Yeah, I thought it was somebody with the saviors. You know, there was this one moment where Paula gets on the walkie and says to somebody after she stabbed one of those walkers by the door of kind of the saw room there, that we need to keep this hallway clear. And to me, that emphasized that that's their escape route, but there's another hallway that they've kind of booby trapped with these walkers. So I really believe that was set up as a deterrent to keep Maggie and Carol, like as a kind of secondary buffer to keep them from being able to escape.
Okay. Maybe somebody in the comments can weigh in on what they think ultimately was going to happen, because I felt like once that, you know, she was trying to radio Rick and it was like, that wasn't taking very long. They're really close. Like I thought maybe this was like one of Rick and company, one of his tricks that they were setting up.
Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting thought. I just really felt like it was, you know, kind of another sign of them underestimating Maggie and Carol, in that they thought, you know, if we set this up, and even if, you know, in these moments where we're going to walk away, like there was moments they kind of left them on to their own devices. I think they thought that at least the walker, you know, certainly, you know, 5-6 walkers in a group, they don't have a sharp object or anything. Like, you know, some are standing and mounted to the wall while some are on the ground without legs. I think it was kind of set up almost like a minefield. Okay. So, you know, to me, I saw it that way.
Let's get into some of the questions, because a lot of interesting discussion points are raised from this episode. Why don't we start to go through? And of course, we're taking your questions from Twitter, hashtag PS Recaps, and then also on our YouTube channel at postshowrecaps.com/YouTube on this video, on the video page. Why don't we start with Pitt1971, who says, watching Carol tonight and how the people she killed seem to weigh more and more on her, is there any possibility we're getting closer to a Morgan philosophy from here on in? Now, it's interesting that the season started with Morgan and Carol just so diametrically opposed to one another. And then they have that scene at the end in the, you know, mid-season finale where they're sort of like going at each other physically. And now we're starting to see Carol maybe come around more and more to where Morgan sees things.
Yeah, the Morgan effect. I mean, you know, it's very compelling philosophy. I mean, I certainly, after watching that Cheesemaker episode, I was touched. So, you know, I think, you know, if people are in the right place mentally, that they can, you know, begin to understand Morgan's philosophy. The problem is when you no longer have the luxury to embrace that philosophy. I think when they're at Alexandria and when things are going well and when they're kind of on top of the mountain, that Morgan's philosophy seems very appealing. But if things start to go downhill, and if Negan's group were to, you know, come in and raise hell, all of a sudden Morgan's philosophy seems a lot less practical.
Yeah, it's just one of those philosophical discussions where on paper it sounds good. They're like, oh yeah, you know, Morgan is right. I think, you know, all life has value and we should value all living things. Okay, great. What do you do with like Negan? You know, what do you do with one of these wolves that gets behind the gate in this world where, you know, there is no sort of penal system where, you know, there's no way to try Negan in a court of law. There's no restraining order to put against a Negan. In this society, can that philosophy work? And I feel like that it cannot. And I believe that it's also the opinion of the show that that cannot. What do you think?
I absolutely agree. I think the show has shown us many instances. You know, I mean, you can talk about Eastman and the, kind of the walker that gets him because he's protecting Morgan. I think there are many instances the show has shown where if you don't, you know, a half measure, as you know, as you would talk about, is not okay in this world. That if you see something that clearly sticks out as a concern, that you have to take care of it now or kind of lament it later.
Yeah. Okay. What other questions do we have?
Okay. Here is a question from R. Philly.
R. Philly.
Is it just me or did Paula's crew have some seriously complex protocols and contingency plans while transporting Maggie and Carol? Yeah, I picked up on that too. So they really did seem to have, you know, a lot of things in place. They certainly were using some phrases and kind of, you know, shorthand type of speak that reminded me of kind of a Zero Dark 30 or some kind of military op movie like a Black Hawk Down. What'd you think about that, Rob?
I just think that, you know, we're being shown that the saviors are, you know, pretty hardened and they know what they're doing. You know, this is not amateur hour, even though Maggie and Carol were able to escape from you know, their clutches. That I just think that these are people, this is a highly organized operation.
Yeah, I just think, you know, it was so interesting when we saw that they were going to attack a group that we had so little information of. Like, that was kind of new territory for The Walking Dead, and that we were, you know, we knew the governor to a degree. I mean, we knew some of these people before they were engaged by Rick's group. But with these saviors, I mean, it really is. It's uncertainty. And now we learn more and more, and it's, you know, they seem more and more capable and more competent. And you do worry that this is going to kind of devolve into maybe a dumpster fire so big that even Glenn couldn't find his way out.
Yeah. Okay. Let's take a question from Carol, who says, different Carol. The Negan group seems to be very eye for an eye, but not too strict considering that they only steal a baby finger for gas stealing. Did you feel like that punishment fits the crime?
Is that a mild punishment? I mean, she just took some gas. I mean, I get that like gas is a valuable resource, but so's a finger?
Yeah, you know, I probably signed board with Carol with this. I mean, that the last shipment from the hilltop was light and bring us Gregory's head. It's like, you're stealing gas. All right, let's take that little tip of your little finger on your left hand. Like, what's the, you know, give us, what's the number one body part you're not going to miss?
Well, you know, that's a good point. And maybe that speaks to why these people are with the saviors. You know, maybe Negan has kind of created an atmosphere up here in the greater DC area, which is scary for me because I would be directly involved if I even made it that far. But maybe he really has created an atmosphere where it's be with me and lose a finger if you do something wrong, or be against me and lose your head if you do nothing wrong. And you could see how a lot of people like you're talking about would find the first option somewhat more appealing.
Okay. This is another good question from R. Philly and wants to know, is the encounter with a remorseless mirror of herself going to make Carol a stronger or weaker person moving forward? So meeting up with Paula, who is this sort of Carol doppelganger, what do you think about her as as how she will possibly change Carol?
I don't think it was great for Carol because it was not something Carol wanted any part of. She even said that, you know, verbally to Paula, and that I didn't want this moment right here, you know? And I think the fact that Carol had to go through it anyway, you know, she could handle it and she was able to handle it. But you do wonder how many of these moments, how many, you know, look at the flowers type of moments Carol can endure, how many moments anyone could endure before they kind of just either lose touch with their compassion and humanity or just kind of have some kind of mental break.
Okay. let's take a question from Spicy Wasabi, who wants to know, will the Alexandrians and Rick's company be all calling themselves Rick soon? Yeah, are we all Rick also?
I mean, I like the strategy. I think it's pretty smart. You know, I think I see the practicality of it for sure.
But is that a philosophical strategy or that's a tactical strategy?
I see it as tactical. I see it as a means for kind of ensuring the safety of the true leader. Do you see it that way or no?
Well, I don't know. I mean, when we had people like, I believe it was Maul in the episode who said, we're all Negan. I thought that was more a philosophy, more so than, oh, are you looking for Negan? I'm Negan.
That's true. Yeah, well, I guess also, but she's talking to, you know, their prisoners at that point. So maybe she feels a little safer about kind of flaunting it as a philosophy and less as a strategy. But, you know, I certainly see practical, you know, implications of it for sure.
Yeah. Okay. Why don't we take a question from Will Northrup, who wants to know, one thing I've noticed that walkers used to fully devour people. Now they only take a couple bites and quit eating. Does this bother anybody else? Redheaded savior shouldn't have been there for Maggie to stab at the end. What do you think? Is this bothering you?
I mean, you know, yeah, I thought it was interesting that he kind of lost interest. But like I said, I guess I could buy the premise that like as someone starts to turn, it's like, you know, the expiration date on something, you know, I guess I could see that. And then also the guy is impaled. So certainly he's not going to be able to get too far past the face anyway.
Yeah. You know, back in my day that the walker would eat an entire person and they wouldn't just like leave a little bit. You know, what's with these walkers on diets?
These zombies today, man, they're just too active and
waste too much food. Okay. What about Ryan McMurray? Do you think that the reason Maggie kept smashing the Carol who let herself go in the head over and over is because she just wanted people to call her by her actual name and not Natalie or Magnolia? Hashtag I am Maggie.
Yeah. Don't mess with Maggie. Right. Yeah. That was a powerful moment. Yeah. I don't know if it was just, you know, anger at the situation or just a fit of aggression or just, you know, raw adrenaline. But that was a very, very aggressive display for Maggie.
Yeah. Okay. Let's take some more questions. What about from Cabin Douche, who wants to know, did Walking Dead just go full Lord of the Rings by counting kills?
Oh, I hope so. I hope we get a segment. Like, I would love some kind of scene down the road where someone, you know, you've got a conversation between maybe like an Abraham and a Daryl. How many are you on? 42, that's nothing, or something like that. Like, that would be fantastic. Yeah. I really hope we're going that route.
You do get on the Walking Dead story sync. They ask you to predict at the start of the episode which character is going to have the most kills.
Oh, that's cool. That's like their own jelly beans in a jar kind of thing. That's interesting.
Yeah.
I did wonder what they do with the story sync because I haven't checked it out. But yeah, I mean, they've got to have stuff to keep it interesting.
Yeah, I watch it for pretty much all of these AMC shows. It's good for Better Call Saul as well. You know, it's fun to have on, you know, some of it. Sometimes it's just like, you know, like a silly poll. But sometimes like they'll show you like something like, there'll be a line and it's like, OK, this is actually a very similar line to something somebody said in season two. So I'd say probably like 80% of it is pretty worthless. But, you know, for the 20% of stuff that's relevant, it's good.
Yeah, it's good. Like, that's how you pick up on stuff like, you know, Carol's bleeding hand. I missed that.
Well, that wasn't in the story sync. That was just in the episode.
Come on, Rob, let me have this one.
Cabin Douche wants to say, gotta think we haven't met Negan's A-team yet. Do you think, is this like a video game? Do you feel like, okay, we've just like beaten like all the easy bosses and then now we're up to level 4, level 5, and now Negan's really tough bosses are going to be coming?
Yeah, Donnie in this group was just a checkpoint. And then going forward is when we're actually going to have to deal with the stuff that makes us have to keep restarting the game over and over because of the difficulty.
We're sorry, yeah, Rick, but Negan is in another castle.
Yeah, Rick, please insert quarter to continue, man.
Yeah.
So, sorry.
Yeah, we'll see ultimately what's going to happen with whether or not we end up getting the A-team with Negan. Let's take another question from Will Northrup. What was the last time we had a Walking Dead bottle episode? Can we expect something huge based off the money AMC saved this week?
I hope so. I would like that. But I also thought this is a great episode and a great example of why you don't need the huge CGI budget in every episode to make an episode good.
Yeah, I did not mind this at all. I thought this episode was fantastic. And I think maybe this could be my favorite episode out of all of season six. I really did feel like, you had tension. I don't necessarily need a million Walker kills in an episode for it to walk away as a great episode, because I felt like there was tension. There was drama. There was like a story with a beginning, middle, and end. I was very satisfied with this as an hour of television tonight.
Yeah. And I think, knowing Carol's background and knowing kind of that her immediate hype, when she started hyperventilating, I had a strong sense that this was kind of an act on her part. So I think just having that knowledge throughout the episode that Carol's really sandbagging these people was really kind of cool, in that you're in on what is ultimately going to be a payoff in the episode.
But did you feel like any part of that was real or no?
It's hard to say. I mean, I feel like she certainly worried about Maggie in that moment, but I definitely felt like she was making herself hyperventilate.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. It's like she had to have something, in her heart, I guess, to build off of, to get herself worked up. But she was able to do it through, at least to the best of my knowledge, kind of playing it up.
To me, I just go back to that whole part at the end of the episode where it's like, what are you afraid of, Carol? And I'm afraid that I'm going to have to do this. Like, does Carol know from that moment early on in the episode, does she know I'm going to have to kill all these people? Or is it that she really is just sort of like going through the motions and just playing possum with everybody? You know, is she hyperventilating at that moment at all because she knows what she's going to have to do to everybody? Or is she actually scared? And I do think that there is some gray area there with that. I think it's probably too clean just to say that Carol 100% was playing everybody. She was Kaiser Soze-ing it the entire episode. And that by the end, she ultimately, this was just a mask that she put on and then revealed herself by the end of the episode.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I also think that, we definitely saw the moment where she hesitates again to shoot with Paula. And, that speaks to what you're saying. I really do think that, if there is something she's really scared of in that moment, it may be what she herself is capable of.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I am very eager to see what The Walking Dead is capable of here in these final three episodes. Can you believe only three episodes left in the season?
Yeah, crazy. And I think the big shoe is still to drop in terms of who is Negan. Is he still out there? I have to think he is. And when are we going to see him?
Yeah, I think pretty soon. Only three episodes left here in season six. So very, very excited about how this is all going to play out. And then what do you predict next week? What are we doing next week?
Oh, man. Yeah. Where do we go from here? I think that really, speaks to kind of which Rick is kind of in control right now, because, crazy Rick that, took out the claimed guys would, I think, go on the offensive right now for sure. But, Farmer Rick would, double the guard and go back to Alexandria and plant his sorghum. So I think it's very interesting that, I think we could go a couple of different ways. I think either way could work if they're vigilant potentially, but either way could also backfire drastically.
Okay. Well, we want to hear from you on our Walking Dead feedback show. You can go ahead and send us your voicemail. Go to postshowrecaps.com/voicemail, or you can send us your email questions. Go to send them to twd@postshowrecaps.com. Josh Wigler and I are going to be recording that, I believe, Wednesday morning of this week. So make sure you get those in. Looking forward to hearing what you guys have to say about this episode. Alex, do you have a hashtag for this episode?
Let's see.
We had the story of the coffee, the egg, and the carrot tonight, which I did really enjoy. Anything from that?
Well, you're supposed to be coffee. You want to be coffee, so just be coffee.
I am coffee.
Yeah, I am coffee.
Like I am Negan?
Yeah. Or I am legend?
Sure. Okay, let's go with that. I am coffee. Russ is saying dieting walkers also. Yeah. You can go that way too.
Or I can't believe it's not people or whatever.
All right. Well, great job tonight, Alex. You can follow Alex on Twitter. He's at Alex Kidwell. I am at Rob Sestrino. We'll be back with Walking Dead voicemail later on this week. Plus, I am going to be continuing my 13 Days of House of Cards with Zach Brooks. Look for that as well on post-show recaps as well. Earlier tonight, I recapped Saturday Night Live with Ariana Grande this weekend. So a ton of stuff coming up on post-show recaps, including this next episode of Better Call Saul tomorrow night on AMC that I will recap with Antonio Mazzaro, who I also discussed the last few weeks of The People versus O.J. Simpson on post-show recap. So is that enough for you?
No, it's never enough for me, Rob. I love the content you're putting out there.
Don't be like one of these little walkers that's only going to like nibble a little bit on all of these podcasts. Gorge yourselves, okay?
Yeah, it's there for the taking. Be ambitious.
There for the taking. All right. Have a good night, everybody. Thanks again, Alex, and we'll talk to you again soon. Take care, everybody. Bye.